Y'all, I am so excited because Through the Gryffindor is heading back out on tour. Starting in February of 2025, we'll be performing live shows in Charlotte, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Nashville. And as always, we will be bringing all of the magic with a tour-long Jay versus Ben trivia showdown with questions submitted and asked by all of you. And then, of course, we will dim the lights for a live recording of Through the Gryffindor. And y'all, these nights have made for some of my all-time favorites since we have started making content on the internet. It is truly a magical evening, nerding out Harry Potter style with the very best community online. Plus, we have a VIP upgrade for each show if you want to come and meet Jay and I, take photos, ask questions, and score an exclusive signed tour poster before the show begins. We would love to see you. We'd love to meet you, and we hope you will come and join us for all of the fun. Tickets are available in the show notes for every show or at supercarlinbrothers.com. Super Carlin Brothers is sponsored by Nude. Y'all, of course, know about my podcasting and YouTube endeavors, and you may even know that I do some aquarium maintenance at times, but you may not be aware that my wife, Alice, and I also own a business together called Nude. I know it's a funny name, but there's actually a fun story behind it. See, Alice has always had a deep love for clothing and fashion, but even more so for thrifting. It was her way to sustainably and economically expand her wardrobe while still aiming for quality brands that would last. And she is really good at it. Like, I can't tell you the number of times over the years that she has been stopped by people admiring her finds. So much so that she coined a phrase for her response. Thanks, it's nude. As in new, but in the past tense, because it's not exactly new, it's nude. So, we took this concept and created a storefront not 100 yards from where Super Carlin Brothers was created and have an online shop featuring pre-loved clothing from brands like Lululemon, Free People, Anthropologie, Madewell, and so many more. If you'd like to check it out for yourself to ring in the nude year, if you will, you can do so at nudesalem.com and use promo code SUPER to get 20% off your entire order. That's NEWDSalem.com, promo code SUPER for 20% off.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the riddles inside Goblet of Fire, Chapter 4, Back to the Burrow.
Back to the Burrow, indeed, except we won't spend any time at the Burrow.
We're just getting back there.
It's a whole other
chapter of the Dursleys.
Yes, exactly. So here, this chapter is, I think it's kind of, I think it can pose an interesting question for today's episode because it's a rather short chapter.
It is.
I would say it's light on lore, high on laughs.
Yes, very funny chapter.
Yes, so it's kind of just like a fun chapter to read, but and I don't mean this in a negative way. It's just a question that I want to ask for the purposes of analysis. As we go through the chapter, what is the point of this chapter?
I think I know exactly what you're talking about because I got to the end and I was like, this is an interesting take based on what is about to happen in a couple of chapters, and.
Okay.
Or maybe.
Well, I'll be curious to hear more more of your thoughts on that because I have potentially similar thoughts, and we might just have to explore it as we get there because there's a couple of like small little bits, but like it seems like for the most part when you go through a chapter, you can find like okay, see, this is important because this is establishing such and such,
right?
And that will come back later, even though right now it's kind of just like a throwaway detail.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, it establishes some very like unimportant things that like. There's some like maybe a little bit heavier theming towards the end. I think
I would agree with you. There's a like I was able to sort of distill out my takeaway of the chapter into like a single sentence.
Yeah,
it's not terribly profound and it won't like blow anybody's like lids off or anything like that.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to be like, what? No way. I've never considered that before. But I don't know. Yeah. It'll be curious to see. But before we dive on into that, obviously we got to talk about the chapter art.
Of course we do. So we've got, Mr. Weasley or one of the Fred or George or Ron's, legs just bursting out of the Dursleys' fireplace.
Yes. The funny thing to me is that, like, it is described as though the fireplace is boarded up.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I can't imagine anyone on number 4 Privet Drive has, like, 2x4s covering, kind of, I mean, the way that it is pictured boarded up reminds me a lot of, like, Vernon boarding up the mail slot.
Yeah.
You know, in year one.
I know. It's, like, a confusing picture because, yeah, it says it's boarded up, but then Harry is going to go on to say, like, they've got an electric, like, fire or whatever. Like, and he's like, what, with a plug? You know, he's like, Mr. Weasley, super excited about it. And I'm like, okay, but, like, then you wouldn't board up the fireplace. You'd still want to see the fire.
You'd still want to see the fire. Yeah,
and, like,
exactly.
Certainly, even if you wanted to, like, board up, like, the chimney or something, so that, like, stuff didn't come down the chimney, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, potentially, like, airflow or something. I have no idea.
I don't know. Even if you were to do that, you wouldn't want to use boards because the fire, even if it is not a log fire, is still fire and will still catch things on fire.
Yes. Unless it is literally, like, a digital picture of, like,
right,
of flames with, like, you know, like an infrared heater emitting heat out into the room, kind of like.
I guess.
So yeah, I mean, I guess they say an electric fireplace. I have gas logs at home, and so I think in my head I have shifted into this thought that they are like gas logs, but my gas logs are not electric at all.
Right.
And so it's kind of like, well, then there's not really, like, maybe it's not a real fire.
Maybe it's not a real fire. I know. I'm like, what? Maybe this is, like, a difference between, like, American and, like, British, where they say, like, electric fire, they just mean, like, a heater or something.
Oh, yeah. That could be the case.
Right.
I can see that.
Yeah. Cause, like, I'll, like, what? But even then, why would you board up the fireplace? Like, it just doesn't make any, like, I can't think of any reason why you would just, like, I can see putting a gate in front of it. That would look nice. But, like, the way it is pictured with the boards bursting off of it, like, someone just, like, used their Looney Tunes hammer and boards to cover it up. Like,
it reads to me like there's an apocalypse outside and you've boarded up all openings to the house just in case.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? You know what it could be?
What's that?
And maybe I'm just letting the movie influence me too much. Is that, like, in year one, when the letters flood the house, a ton of them are coming through the chimney.
You're right.
So maybe that's it. They're like, nope, board this up. No, thank you.
I like that.
Yeah.
I do like that. Like, okay. Like, it's like a lingering remnant of what was once their fireplace that they, like, abandoned.
Right.
Because of their, you know, which I think would even kind of be funny because Dudley will spend a lot of this chapter sort of, like, reeling with what his last encounter with a wizard ended with.
Yeah.
Which is getting the pig's tail. And so this would be like, it's not just Dudley. Like, Vernon and Petunia also took steps so that, like, future interactions with wizards went differently.
Yeah.
But then it gets kind of thrown in their face.
It is going to literally backfire on
them. Yes. all puns intended.
All very fun intended. Oh my gosh. Okay. So anyway, let's just dive into the chapter here. So if you recall, coming out of the last chapter, Vernon has agreed to let Harry go to the Quidditch World Cup. Not that he had much choice in the matter anyway, because they were coming, whether or not Harry said they could. But Harry has packed up all of his things, meticulously double, triple checked his room for all of his things. We get a nice little rundown of Harry's inventory, which one of my favorite things in any fantasy book is when the heroes get, like, new toys.
Yes.
Like, they, like, add to their inventory. So Harry's, like, current rare items include the invisibility cloak, the firebolt, and the Marauder's map, all of which is, like, I love when he gets new toys.
I know. Yeah. So these in any video game would all be regarded as, like, secret rare or unique items.
Yeah, absolutely. Specifically the invisibility cloak. That would be like a one of one.
One of one, yeah. Yes, yeah. It's like when Magic the Gathering made, like, the one true ring and there was like one card in the whole set. Yes, yeah. So that's really cool. We also get, like, sort of who they all came from, obviously, which is the invisibility cloak is from James, the broomstick is from Sirius, and the enchanted map is from Fred and George Weasley, who are about to burst into the living room.
Yes, they are.
Harry has emptied out the hiding place under the loose floorboard. He's making sure he's got all of his little standard wizarding bits and bobs.
Yeah. His forgotten spell books or quills.
And I guess he has the calendar, like, marking down the days, like, when he gets to go back to Hogwarts. And I love that he takes it down, and he's like, you know what? Go into the Burrow. Don't even care about counting down the days anymore.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, that's kind of funny. Like, whilst he's at Privet Drive, he's, like, counting down the days, and, like, he goes to the Burrow, and it's like, now the days are numbered.
I know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, now, okay, I wish kind of wish we had more summer break.
Now summer is just fun.
Yeah, yep. It says though that the atmosphere inside of Number 4 Privet Drive was extremely tense. The imminent arrival at their house of an assortment of wizards was making the Dursleys uptight and irritable.
Yeah, which I highlighted and just said, so normal?
So completely regular.
Regular day for them, right?
Yeah.
Also, I love it. It's they're so out of sorts at the arrival when in the last chapter, Vernon's like, they had to come pick you up, mind.
Right. Yeah, it's like,
you asked for this.
You made these terms.
Yes, you made these terms. Not that the terms weren't already set, but like you sort of also made the same terms.
You came to the same conclusion.
Exactly.
Yeah. Also, I thought it was kind of funny because like we'll get another glimpse at what Dudley's diet's looking like over the summer, and it's like, you could be uptight and irritable because you guys are being just massively underfed at the moment.
Massively underfed, yeah.
Yeah, because there is something to be said for appropriate calorie intake, and it seems like they are way below any ordinary level might be.
I know. Like, it sounds like what they're having for breakfast is half a grapefruit, and for lunch they're having like cottage cheese and grated celery.
Yes, which, I mean, it's like, okay. Like, I can appreciate trying to eat healthier, but like this is just verging on excessive.
This is, I mean, absolutely. What's crazy to me too is that it's like not working. Like, how deep? They're past Harry's birthday. They are like over a month into the summer.
Right. Yeah. Right? You got to imagine this has been going on now for the better part of what, 6 weeks?
Yeah. Like, on the next page, it's going to say, Dudley, on the other hand, looked somehow diminished. This was not because the diet was at last taking effect. And it's like, but like, it should be.
It absolutely should be.
I mean, if you're eating this low calorie numbers, like, it should be pretty noticeable by now.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I even talked about it in last week's episode, but like the kind of fad diet that was the grapefruit diet, I think that it was suggested that like in 15 days you could lose 15 pounds, which I mean, it's not a dietary or nutritionist backed, you know, technique for weight loss in any way. But it seems like massive calorie deficit should be doing something.
Yeah, right.
So then we get a little bit of the sheer differences between Vernon and Arthur kind of get established very early, which is that Vernon is putting his expectations in all the wrong places and setting himself up for failure.
Yeah.
I hope you told them to dress properly, these people. To which Harry sort of like, yeah, that's not going to go well.
Not going to go well.
Not one bit.
He'd rarely seen Mr. and Mrs. Weasley wearing anything that Dursleys would call normal, which the word rarely means like he's seen a little, right?
Right.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Just a scooch here and there.
Scooch here and there.
It does say, though, that their children might don Muggle clothing during the holidays, but Mr. and Mrs. Weasley usually wore long robes in varying states of shabbiness, which I think is kind of interesting because it's like it does mean that somehow, some way, they are acquiring the Muggle clothing. And doing it somewhat in accordance with what you might regard as like traditional attire.
I know. It's like there's a weird line drawn between like what counts as Muggle clothes and just clothes, because like it doesn't seem like wizards are wearing like robes at all time with nothing underneath them. Like even their school uniforms seem like they have pants and shirts and stuff.
Right. Yes. Like you're still wearing some measure of like kind of like, I mean, I guess like on some level you like pants and shirts. It's like the world over wasn't surprised when they discovered that other people were designing them pretty much the same way.
Right, yeah.
Because we have the same...
Everyone's got the same body shape.
Yeah, kind of starfish shape.
I know. Right. Yeah, you know how humans are star-shaped?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's like also like why... It says their children might don Muggle clothing. I'm like, why would they? If like the parents don't, like, why don't they? Or like, why? I'm surprised Mrs. Weasley is going to the trouble of putting on robes every day to do like housework and things, you know?
I know. Yeah. I mean, I guess I suppose there's some level where it's just like, it's just what you do. So you don't really question it.
Yeah, I guess it's true.
your way of doing things.
But then, like, why don't the children just wear robes every day, you know?
Also a fair question.
Yeah.
Also a fair question.
I don't know. But it also seems like if the kids are wearing Muggle clothes every day, then they'd have some semblance of what Muggle clothing is supposed to look like.
Right, right.
You know?
It comes back to the same thing, which is that, like, Arthur should be the person who is the most informed with Muggle-related things. We talked about this last week with, like, the envelope. Mm-hmm. It's like, surely Arthur got an outstanding in Muggle studies.
Surely.
It's sort of like, how low is the bar being set by the wizarding populace as to what it means to learn Muggle culture?
This, to me, I think is part of the point of the chapter.
Okay.
In terms of, like, what is the point? Because, like, you're right. Arthur is the shining example of a wizard who actively loves Muggles, loves Muggle things.
Right.
He is, like, the prime example of a pure-blooded wizard. So he doesn't come from, like, a Muggle family like Hermione, who just understands Muggle things.
Right.
But, like, he is, like, from a pure-blood approach, he is extremely interested in it. It's his hobby. He works in he's, like, the head of the Muggle department of the Ministry of Magic.
Right.
Like, he's the number one, maybe, example in all of Britain who should know the most about Muggles. And, like, even the hyper leaned in Arthur Weasley is ignorant of even the most basic things about Muggle culture.
Right, right, right. Like, it's interesting because it almost makes me wonder if there was, like, some type of overlord in outer space that was, like, watching NASA interact with space travel and satellites and stuff, and they're like, oh, look at them. They're not even close.
Not even close.
You know, it's like, you know, anyone on Earth would look at those people and be like, they are Earth's greatest geniuses when it comes to aerospace engineering.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But this hypothetical space overlord type person who knows how space works is sort of like, they are just tip of the iceberg at the moment.
They haven't even discovered Squabbledobs yet.
Squabbledobs. You know? It's going to make all the difference.
It's going to make all the difference.
They
They all do. Oh, God. It's right there. It's like they're so close. They're so close.
They're so close. Or maybe we're not. Who knows?
Yeah.
but yeah, so I do think it's very funny. I think that's a big thing to sort of outline. Is how much they're kind of getting that stuff wrong. Going on from there, it says, Harry wasn't bothered about what the neighbors would think about the Weasleys, but he was anxious about how rude the Dursleys might be to the Weasleys if they turned up looking like their worst idea of wizards, which, of course, they're going to.
They're going to, and then some.
And then some, yes.
Yep.
And then we learn that Uncle Vernon has put on his best suit. And I love the clarification because it's like, to some people, this might have looked like a gesture of welcome, but Harry knew it was because Uncle Vernon wanted to look impressive and intimidating.
Yeah, that is. I mean, this is just, I mean, everything about the way Vernon is preparing for it, he's like, how are they going to arrive? What kind of car are they going to be driving? What will they be wearing?
Yes.
Like, everything has to do with appearances for him.
Everything has to do with appearances, and this was sort of like my chief takeaway from this chapter is that Vernon is expecting all of the worst out of the Weasleys, while Arthur is expecting just nothing but the best from the Dursleys.
Exactly. There is that huge contrast.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It's like they both have expectations, and I guess, to be fair, on some level, Vernon's expectations are accurate. Like,
in a way,
he worries that they will be dressed out of the ordinary, and they are. And
right.
I guess he worries that magic could be at play, and it is. And their beautiful living room is destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, all things that, like, I guess people who are already anticipating the worst are going to view through this very negative lens. But in the meantime, it's also one of those things where if they would just, like, take just the slightest pause at all any of the upcoming events, it would be like, Arthur can fix it.
Yeah,
he's not going to leave your living room in shambles.
Yeah,
like he's gonna repair it, it'll be fine.
I know. Yeah, like, of course, you, the reader, completely know that, but I think it's still just like, this is again like the point of the chapter. It's to, like, show you, the reader, that there is this divide between, like, how wizards think of Muggles overall.
Okay,
because, like, here you have the Dursleys, who are actively, like, trying to be ignorant of the magical world.
Right.
Right. And versus, and so they have no idea about any of it. But then you have Mr. Weasley, who is actively trying to be informed about the Muggle world and still has no idea.
Right.
Like,
right.
So different are their cultures. But it's like, I think we've even talked about this before. There's times when, like, Mr. Weasley even has been like, ah, bless him or whatever. Like, he kind of, like, he loves them, but he still sort of looks down his nose a little bit at Muggles.
Right. Like, it's probably not the way you want to be referred to. Like, I mean, I'm trying to think of an example that doesn't seem completely off base here. But, yeah, I mean, it would be like being around somebody less fortunate than you by some type of materialistic basis and being like, oh, poor things.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like, no, like, you know, don't pity people.
Right.
Like, you know, and their actual lifestyles.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think it's a common trope, I feel like, with like very like wealthy or affluent characters in media, oftentimes being like, wow, can't believe you'd wear that.
Well, it's exactly the way the Malfoys treat the Weasleys.
Yes, exactly. You know. Yeah. Anyway, so let's see here. Then as we move forward...
we learned that the diet is not working, which is surprising, given how little Dudley's eating. Which to me, as I read that, I was like... It was not because the diet was taking effect. I was like, I wonder if Harry is like magically like making it not work or something.
You'd almost have to imagine that something like that is the case.
Yeah.
You know, like it's almost like the Marge situation, except for in a more ongoing passive.
Right.
Kind of
situation or something.
Especially because he's been able to like, you know, sort of sock it to them, so to speak, by being able to like get his friends to like send him things.
Yeah.
So he's even like undermining their own regime. And so like, if that didn't just apply to like Harry getting to enjoy himself, but also like counteracting the effects of
right.
the dieting.
It is like the act. Yeah. Yeah. I like that idea that like his actual act of undermining them is like magically undermining the diet.
Yes. Yeah. Which honestly, on some level, like, I mean, we know that Dudley in the next year will find and discover boxing, which is going to give him like the physical outlet. But it seems like Dudley is going to take a lot of like, you know, his current like stature and convert that into like muscle.
Yeah.
And become quite like
formidable.
Formidable. Exactly. Yeah. So it could be the case that like, yeah, like once he's been like put on maybe a more correct dietary path and combine that with the athletic outlet, then, and not being around Harry, it's the magical recipe for taking Dudley into the next, into Big D. Yeah.
But then I think we already maybe knew this, but they just reiterate that Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon had to pay for the removal of the pig's tail that Hagrid gave him back in book one, which to me is kind of surprising that, like, you know, they had to solve it with Muggle means and that, like, Dumbledore or the Ministry or someone didn't step in and just be like, yeah, we can just get rid of that real quick.
You're right. There is the line, I think, from Hagrid who's like, appreciate it if you wouldn't tell anybody I did that. I'm not supposed to be using magic.
Right.
And so it's like, Harry, not a snitch.
Harry, not a snitch. But also, Hagrid, not super, like, definitely like a lie of omission with Dumbledore.
Yes.
Or else Dumbledore's like, did you really? Hilarious, Hagrid. I'll go fix it up, wink.
I love you. I love how quirky you've made Dumbledore in this scenario.
Absolutely.
He seems more like a mad wizard than like a kind and gentle old man.
I like to imagine the real Dumbledore is the one from Potter Puppet Pals.
Okay, naturally.
He's just like, what did you do? Well done, Hagrid.
High five.
Or like high one with those guys. Let's see. So so Dudley's going to keep walking around like covering his butt with his hands here because he's afraid that they're going to give him another tail. And it's like interesting. It's worded as so as to not present the same target to the enemy. So it's like that is very much the way. It's not just like they're like weird or foreign. Literally the enemy.
Yes, you're right. That's a very good point. Yeah, it's like anybody who is not like me is opposition. And it's like, yeah, that's not how we should view the world.
Yeah.
But it does feel like the way that the Dursleys tend to view the world. So
yep.
Let's see here. We see that the lunch was going to be the cottage cheese and grated celery, which just sounds
grated celery.
Absolutely miserable.
Never even heard of that.
Celery is very like low on my list of least favorite foods.
Yeah,
and I mean grating it like. Ugh.
Yeah, why would you? I mean, like at least if it's like ungrated. grated, you get like some kind of like texture, some crunch or something.
I know. Yeah. Then just grated. It's just like fibrous. Like it's
just like, yeah. What? I don't understand. Yeah. Cottage cheese, on the other hand, I like cottage cheese.
You know, I don't eat a lot of cottage cheese because I find it to be visibly off-putting. But yeah. It's not a flavor thing. It's like a, yeah. It's the way it looks.
Yeah, yeah. I make, we make yogurt bowls in the morning.
Yeah.
And we have like a base of like frozen blueberries. And then you cover that in the cottage cheese. And then you cover that in the yogurt, often mixed with some sort of like peanut butter, like PB2, like dry peanut butter or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so you don't actually end up really seeing the cottage cheese as you eat it.
Oh.
You just get to taste it. Yeah.
You know, I feel like Dudley really could have used you.
He could have. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He would have benefited a lot. They're high in protein.
You know. You go. Hey, look at that.
I guess that's something for the cottage cheese. You know, he's getting something out of it.
That's true. That's true.
Perhaps a little more filling than the grapefruit.
Right, right. Yep, absolutely. Then we get another line similar to Vernon asking about how they're going to be dressed, which is, they'll be driving, of course. Uncle Vernon barked across, said Harry. he hadn't thought of that. How were the Weasleys going to pick him up? They didn't have a car anymore because the old Ford Anglia they had once owned is currently running wild in the Forbidden Forest at Hogwarts.
Yeah, that is, of course, thanks to Harry and Ron flying it back in Chamber of Secrets, lest you've forgotten.
Yes, indeed. If anybody was ever like, what is the Ford Anglia they once owned?
Yeah, wait, what? I know. Do you think he would have been impressed, like, had they not done that and they just pulled up in the Ford Anglia, like, would Vernon have been impressed?
It's a good question.
I doubt it.
He's like, wow, sick ride, man.
Yeah, whoa.
Give me some skin.
Yeah.
No, I like to think that there's a world, you know, like where like Vern like walks out there and he's like, pop the hood. Let's see what you got under this thing.
No, yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like that.
Well, I mean, Harry's going to go on to say like he doubted whether Uncle Vernon would have been impressed even if Mr. Weasley had driven a Ferrari.
That's also true.
Like, yeah, it's like, I don't think the Ford Anglia was going to do it for him. Even if it had been a truly impressive car that Uncle Vernon, even if he drove up in Uncle Vernon's car.
Yes, it was going to be a problem.
It was going to be a problem.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you Uncle Vernon would be trading that car in the next day.
The next day.
Yeah. Also, for what it's worth, Ferrari, very non-magical word.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. Like kind of like hamburger.
Yeah, it's like hamburger. Like, it really sticks out like a sore thumb on the page.
It totally does, yeah. Yes. It even reminds me of, like, the PlayStation from, like, a couple of chapters ago. Where it's like,
right.
What is this word even doing in this book?
What is this word? This is, you know what, though? This is why the Percy Jackson books don't feel as immersive. Because there's constantly all these non-deity sounding words.
Yes, yes, yeah. You are right. And yeah. I mean, I've always posed the question, but I'm like, I wonder if it's more fun if you're like not American in regards to that. Because
maybe.
Then it's sort of like, ooh, what is a Dr. Pepper or Doritos? That sounds so like whimsy.
Mm.
And it's like, no, not if you live here.
Not if you live here. Anyway, we don't want to talk about Percy Jackson.
We don't.
Nope.
But we do have the line that I feel like we can't skip over, which is just that Uncle Vernon tended to judge other men by how big and expensive their cars were.
Right. Big and expensive, not necessarily like high performing.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like as if the price tag of the vehicle itself is a feature of the car, even though it has nothing to do with its performance.
Yeah. I mean, often it does. But
it translates. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I just thought it was kind of funny because I was like, if only he had any idea what Harry was like packing in that Firebolt.
Oh, I know.
You know, it's like Harry literally has the most expensive, most powerful
broom yeah,
you know, from the Wizarding World. It's right under their roof. Like,
yes.
he's got like a hot rod.
I know,
just hang out a Ferrari, if you will.
I know, I was gonna say a hot rod. Is that your top tier car? Your dream car?
I think of a hot rod more as like a general like classification of vehicles than like a specific car itself.
I always imagine like the big like exhaust pipes coming out of like a kind of an exposed engine on a front.
Okay.
Like a hot rod.
Like a hot rod.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that I don't know that would be like my ultimate dream car.
Okay. All right.
Maybe
that was a Freudian slip. Maybe it is. Maybe you're really into American Muscle.
That's it. I'm changing my personality.
That's it.
Yeah.
New podcast.
Muscle Cars with Ben.
Yeah.
Look it up now.
Muscle Cars with Ben.
I should
gonna workshop that name.
No. I think it's perfect.
That's it.
Done.
Shipped.
Now I need to like make a thumbnail and establish a podcast and record like 5 minutes just for those people who are like, I wonder if he did it. Man. Trending now. Anyway, we'll continue. Let's see. Harry spent most of the afternoon in his bedroom. He couldn't stand watching Aunt Petunia peer out through the net curtains every few seconds, as though there had been a warning about an escaped rhinoceros. I brought that one up just because I think it's a funny piece of trivia where it would be like, what does Aunt Petunia fear is lurking the streets of Privet Drive when the Weasleys are supposed to be arriving.
Yeah.
So a rhinoceros.
It does kind of remind you of last book when they see the notice about Sirius being like escaped and she like looks out the window like, oh, maybe I'll find him right now.
Maybe he's right there.
Yeah.
And he almost is.
But. Yeah. So she is at least consistent in her behavior. But let's see. So finally, we're getting closer and close. It's a, like there's so much build up to this moment. Like this is all happening on one day. It says finally at 4:45, Harry went back downstairs and entered the living room. It's like it. Like I like the way that the book is written. Very lengthy getting to this point. Like you really had to wait through the day with Harry.
Yeah, you're right, because it does feel like it's like stalling almost a little bit in terms of getting there, or it's like making you live inside of the like general discomfort.
Yeah,
that is this like anticipation.
Yes, yeah, you know, really building you up to what's going to happen here.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Yep. So it's 4:55. Harry goes back downstairs to wait with the Dursleys, where Aunt Petunia is compulsively straightening the cushions. Uncle Vernon is pretending to read the paper. And
it sounds like she's straightening the cushions. Like is she like trying to make like a good impression?
I know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, or is this just the same thing as the suit where it's just right. Sort of like showboating a little bit? Like,
maybe.
Look how nice. You think she's doing like the karate chop method to give it like a nice little.
As far as I understand, that's the appropriate way to do it.
Same here. Same here.
Although I can't imagine her karate chopping anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And
then this is sort of weird. Like they just show up really late for no explained reason.
I know. Yeah. So this is like one of those things where it's like you can sort of understand the Dursleys' perspective, like at least a little bit. I mean, I'm not coming to their defense fully, but like it says 5 o'clock came and went. Uncle Vernon, perspiring slightly in his suit, opened the front door, peered up and down the street, then withdrew his head quickly. They're late, he snarled.
Right. He snarled at Harry, like, you know, like it's Harry's fault.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's like, but it is surprising they're late.
And not just like a little bit late,
yeah.
You know, either, because it's like, you know, it says 5:10, then 5:15. At 5:30, he heard Uncle Vernon and Petunia conversing in terse mutters in the living room. No consideration at all. And it's like, To be fair, 30 yeah. minutes late is pretty behind schedule.
I know. He says, we might have had an engagement. I'm like, yeah, that's fair, I guess. You really might have, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know,
absolutely.
They don't know. And it's not like he comes in and he's like, sorry about that. My useful connection in the flute network had to wait until 5:00 to set up this out of bounds, you know, fireplace or something.
Right. Like it does. It would have taken one sentence to be like, oh, that's why they were late.
That's why they were late. Yeah, so yeah. they're just late.
Especially because they're traveling by what is otherwise teleportation.
Instant. Yes. Like, yeah. what are they doing? It's not like Mr. Weasley has to travel home. He doesn't have to commute. He apparates home, you know, assuming they get off at 5.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If, like, the workday is done at 5, he's home at 5:01.
Yes.
Boys, grab your cloaks.
It's time. Yeah,
it's time. Why? What are we doing? What?
We're going in the fire.
Yeah.
You need cloaks for that. Maybe they think they'll get invited to dinner if they're late, is one of the theories being thrown around here. And I'm like, has this ever been a thing? Is there any recorded instance in the history of humanity where people were precariously late to a situation and the end result was, well, why don't you just stay for dinner?
Just stay. You know, just stay. We're going to grate up some more celery. I think I've got some cottage cheese left over.
Right. Maybe we'll juice a little grapefruit on it.
Juice a little grapefruit. You know, we'll make a night of it.
Right, 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 right. Yes. Yeah. It's gonna be excellent.
Yeah. But so no explanation for why they're late, which I kind of wish we had, because it just doesn't seem like them to be that inconsiderate, unless they're just trying to be inconsiderate. No, I would say, like, I can see Fred and George, like, actively being inconsiderate just for the sake of it.
Yes.
But, like, Mr. Weasley, I don't think so. Either way, the Weasleys do eventually show up in the fireplace.
They do indeed. And we get if you've ever listened to, like, the Jim Dale version through the audiobooks, the exclamation, actually, even just in the book, it's rather hilarious just kind of imagining it in real life. Because, here's the setup. It says, I dare say their kind don't set much store by punctuality. Either that, or they drive some tin pot car that's broken down.
He pronounces every one of those 7 A's.
Yes, yes. It is just a comical number of onomatopoeia letters going on there. And especially because, like, is the noise, is that like Arthur making that noise, or is this Vernon making this noise?
Oh, I think it's Vernon.
Okay.
It's inside the same quotation mark.
It's inside the same quotation mark. So, I mean, it stands. It would make more sense if it was Arthur.
Yeah.
And he just found himself squashed behind the boarded up fireplace.
Yeah.
But instead, he's just being so shaken by a sound.
Yeah.
That he retorts with this particular reaction.
This is a scene, by the way, that is not in the movies, and it is like a scene I cannot wait to see in the live action show.
Oh, it will definitely make it.
Yeah, yeah.
It will this definitely. This is
one, because like in the movies, they just start and they're just like kind of hiking up to the portkey.
I think Hermione wakes Harry up from the dream about Frank Bryce.
Right.
And he's like, bad dream. And Hermione, what are you doing here?
Right.
Or something like that.
It's time to go, Harry.
Right, yeah. Anyway, so let's see here. At this point in time, let's see, here he goes. What happened? What's the matter? Dudley didn't seem to be able to speak. Hands still clamped over his buttocks, which I highlighted it just because I like the usage of buttocks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Never a bad time to use the word buttocks.
Exactly.
Nope.
Exactly.
Also, can I just say, it says, Harry, when he hears Vernon scream, it says, Harry jumped up. From the other side of the living room door came the sounds of the three Dursleys scrambling, panic-stricken, to which, like, am I, like, I don't know. Is it weird that they have a door into the living room?
Maybe.
Is this like a British house thing where there's just doors between the rooms? Because, like, most houses are just kind of open from room to room, right?
Well, I don't know, because it's like, I know that, like, the whole open concept thing, you know, kind of came about somewhere along, you know, the past 20 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have a door, like a butler's door that went between like my dining room and my kitchen, which was kind of weird.
Your dining room and kitchen. Okay.
Yeah, it was like a door that like swang both ways.
Okay.
You know?
Where was that?
Like, if you walked into my kitchen, like through...
At your current house?
At my current house.
What?
Yeah, it used to be there. I ripped it off.
Oh, I was like, I do not remember.
Yes, yeah, yeah. It was always in the way.
Okay, yeah, I guess
I didn't want a door to be there.
I mean, I guess even in the movies, like when like Dudley runs down the stairs, he like shoves Harry back in the cupboard under the stairs, and then there's a door from that hallway into the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very, very compartmentalized.
I guess that feels very Dursley-ish. Lots of doors.
Lots of doors. Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right.
All right.
Loud banging and scrapings were coming from behind the Dursleys' boarded-up fireplace, which had a fake coal fire plugged in front of it. I'm thinking it doesn't create a flame at all. Just like a picture of a flame or something.
A coal fire. Fake coal fire.
I'm picturing kind of like one of those like red... Like, it almost, like, glows red as if, like, it's supposed to be a flame, but there's no actual flame.
I guess. I'm going to look up... Yeah, we're going to have to look up, like, electric coal fire.
I know. Yeah, I mean, it says fake coal fire. Fake, isn't there?
Well, but, like, gas logs would be fake logs.
That's a good point.
Right?
Good counter.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Shopify. Right, let me just say this. Ben is prone to having ideas, like lots of ideas. And as his older brother, it can surely be a double-edged sword. Like some are fun to imagine, but how to even begin executing them is often the issue. And this is the case when it came to merch. Like even back in college, Ben would make these great graphics and windows paint and send them off to screen printers and give them to, you know, me for the holidays. And they looked great, bro, definitely. They were so good. I always thought this aspect of content creating would be so much fun. The trouble was, how do we even start? And that is where Shopify comes in clutch. Their easy-to-use templates and user-friendly interface makes it so easy to go at what I like to call Ben speed, or in more common terms, 0 to 60. Now we have a blast working together to come up with amazing new merch ideas for all of our shows, including this one. It's no secret, businesses want to grow, so grow with Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/griffin, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/griffin to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/griffin.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
What is it, Gaston Petunia, who had backed into the wall and was staring terrified toward the fire? What is it, Vernon? And this is, I think this is just a very funny scene to imagine unfolding, because you've got, ouch, Fred, no, go back, go back. There's been some kind of mistake. Tell George not to. Ouch, George, no, there's no room. Maybe go back and tell Ron.
I love he says, go back. How?
How?
There's no fire. Yeah. How's he going to go back?
Right. I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah.
They have no ability to leave.
They have no ability to leave. They are just sort of stuck there. Okay, I will tell you what I do think is interesting about the fireplace scene and the fact that the Dursleys have boarded it up and don't have a regular fireplace.
Okay.
Is that the Dursleys, everything about the Dursleys' existence is like anti-magic. It is, yes, like they behave in the exact opposite way. So, like, to me, what's interesting about this is that it suggests, and it's like sort of true, it suggests that there is something inherently magical about fire that even the Dursleys wouldn't want fire. Like, even if they don't know, even if they don't consider it magical, like fire is fire, like they know they don't want fire, like for whatever reason, which to me indicates that it is magical because they don't like it.
I don't hate that. I don't hate that, because I do think, yeah, like the fact that wizards have found a way to travel through fire,
yes,
almost means it must have a connection. Like, flu powder aside, flu powder is just proof that there is a way to utilize the fire in a different capacity.
Oh.
Altogether. Yeah.
Flu powder to me is just absolute. Well, sorry. The when later in Order of the Phoenix, when Dumbledore is going to travel by fire out of his office by way of grabbing onto Fox,
yes,
who can travel by fire, to me is just confirmation that flu powder is made from Phoenix ashes.
Yeah, I absolutely like,
there's
think
no
this
way
is the
around
case.
It.
Yeah, yeah. It just makes the most sense.
It just makes the most sense.
It seems like Phoenixes can uniquely travel via some methodology of their own. We know that it's just flu powder. It's like, what could that powder possibly be?
Right.
Also, I think if you went to like the Pottermore archives, there's like a lot of sort of like fascinating like cost control lore attached to how like the flu powder
works.
Yes,
like there is.
It always costs the same amount of money.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of interesting, because if you had phoenixes that you were using, you would always have exactly the same amount of supply available, because phoenixes, it's like if you had three phoenixes and that produced an amount, you know, it's like you always have the same. I mean, I suppose you're ignoring the demand factor,
right?
But at the very least, the supply factor is a static same.
The same for always.
For always.
And the shop that sells it has been there for a very long time. So what we've thought is that, obviously, you have, like, there's only two known tamed phoenixes, Fox and whatever phoenix is the one.
It's like the Scottish.
For the Quidditch team.
Yeah,
Team or something. There's a Quidditch team that has a tamed phoenix as well. But, if you read about flu powder, it's like whoever made it is very secretive about the recipe.
Yes.
Like, how it is made, so, like, no one else can really make it. But to me, that, and if they're using phoenixes and it's a secret, then that is a secret tamed phoenix.
Yes.
Which would then also, because the place you buy it is in Diagon Alley, it would also explain how Ollivander might have access to more phoenix feathers to make other wands.
Right, and that's sort of like an important distinction as well, because we know that Dumbledore provides exactly two from his Phoenix Fox, and that is Tom Riddle's and Harry Potter's.
Right, so it's not like Fox has ever given other phoenix feathers.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And if no one else has tamed phoenixes, then it's almost like, where would, it's not like,
where's he
like,
getting them?
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you could be like, well, that's just Dumbledore and that's just Fox. It's like, you know, but plenty of other people have phoenixes. It's like, they don't. At least not in a well-known capacity.
Do you know what this would mean, though?
What's that?
Well, because this is, what's so weird about this, like Ollivander says he uses Dragonheart Tring, unicorn hair, and phoenix feathers, but only to, Fox is only ever given two feathers.
Right.
And those are Harry and Voldemort's wands.
Right.
But if this is true, that there's like another phoenix supplier or whatever, then all of those wands would have twin cores.
Would be like brother wands.
Yes, would all be brother wands.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
So you would think that anyone else who had a phoenix core, of which no one else in the series is known to, which is surprising as well.
It is surprising.
Yeah, like Harry and Voldemort are the only named people with phoenix core wands. You'd think, though, that if there were more, that if there was like duels happening, which seems like it would happen at school, like any two people with a phoenix wand would not be able to fight each other properly.
You almost have to wonder if like the twin cores thing, it's like, is it because there are only two So it's just like there's like one and another, and so they're, you know, it's like the brother situation. Mm-hmm. Or does it have to be like Avada Kedavra, like a seriously like dark spell that causes like the Priori Incantatum effect to happen?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I suppose that could be the case. But then the other situation there is like, you know, maybe it's like we always think of dueling because they're sort of these like...
But they're in like wartime.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, maybe it's the type of thing where it's like the idea of like turning your wand on like another human being is like, you don't do that.
Yeah.
Like, that would be terrible.
Okay. But also to this end, you'd think a lot of the unicorn hair wands...
You would think that.
A certain number of them must come from the same unicorn.
You would think that.
Right?
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's more brother wands out there.
Right, right. Now my brain is also just going down like a weird mental pathway, which is that like I'm pretty sure that when we were making a video about the yin and the yang and how like Harry and Voldemort both neatly are represented by each of them.
Yeah.
And the idea is that like Harry is white but has a small piece of black inside of him, and that's the Horcrux, and then Voldemort is the black side with the small piece of Harry inside of him, which is the blood that he takes inside of himself. So it's like Voldemort is evil with a small piece of good, and Harry is good with a small piece of evil inside of him. But then in Chinese like mythology, I think that the white portion is represented by a phoenix in the yin yang, and then the black portion I think is represented by a dragon.
A dragon, yeah.
But it's a rather like serpentine looking dragon.
Yeah. It's like a Chinese dragon.
Yeah.
Which I think typically has four legs and no wings but can still fly.
Okay.
Something like that. Something like they do in Raya.
Yeah.
But not always do they have the legs. Sometimes they're just snake.
Just snake, yeah.
Or just have two legs or something. But mostly it's four.
Right. So I'm wondering though, it's like if the brother wand thing would be more specific to phoenix feathers, like versus like other twin cores.
I guess it's possible.
I mean, we've made a pretty big case before that
thestral hairs would work this way.
That thestral hairs would work this way. That the elder wand has a brother, and that brother is Dumbledore's original wand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which would just be kind of interesting.
I don't know. At least the way Dumbledore describes it is that if like they have twin cores, I mean, then this is what would happen.
I know, but we also know that it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
So it's like
I mean, I guess it's possible that like many there's just lots of unicorns that they're getting it from, or lots of dragons that he's getting the heartstrings from.
I suppose that's possible.
Yeah.
I suppose that's possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you could even argue, I suppose, phoenix wise that like maybe like it would only count as like a brother feather if it was like from the same life cycle or something.
I don't hate that explanation. And then there's a question of like, what is the typical life cycle like of
a phoenix?
Of a phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of like,
well, at least let's see. We know that Harry watches Fox burn in Chamber of Secrets, and that by Order of the Phoenix, Fox is fully grown again, and then he like takes a blast of Avada Kedavra and returns to the chick. So yes. That's not really a natural burning day death. Or, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like that's an unexpected death happening.
Yeah. How often does the phoenix cycle happen? That's a good question.
It is a good question.
Don't know.
Yeah. You don't want to think about the fact that the people who in Diagon Alley are making all this flu powder is like, you know, well, the phoenix will come back.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully they're not harming the phoenixes.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't believe that at all.
I can't let my mind go there.
Nope.
Anyway, so we're back to the chapter now because we went on a huge tangent.
We did.
Maybe Harry can hear us, Dad. I love the instant optimism from either Fred or George. That just like, it's like, it'll be fine.
It's fine.
Maybe
we're
Harry
good.
Can hear us.
Yeah.
Harry, can you hear us?
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. And Harry explains to them that they've tried to get here by flu powder because they can travel by fire, not by fireplace, by fire.
Yes.
Right? That's important.
They can travel by fire.
Yeah.
Only you block the fireplace. Hang on.
There we go. So again, I don't know why you would block the fireplace. It doesn't make any sense to me. But what on earth do they want to block the fireplace for? And then he says, oh, they've got an electric fire. Like how Harry's having like, they're having like some small chat while they're all just crammed in there. It's like, oh, wait, why would they do that? And then he says, eclectic, you say, with a plug. It's like, dude, like, How bad are you at your hobby, though? You know?
I know exactly what you mean because, yeah, it's like...
He's trying to say electric.
He's trying to say electric, and he says eclectic. It's not even the first time I think he's like... At some other point, he says like ecletricity.
Yeah.
It's like he really is not nailing it. The only thing that I would say here is that back from my saltwater aquarium days,
yeah,
there was a kind of nuisance anemone that could arise inside of your aquarium that was kind of frustrating because they were small, ugly, and they would spread like crazy, and they would burn all of your other corals. And it was called... Aptasia,
yeah,
but it's spelt like Aiptasia. And the number of people who would come into my store back in the day and call it like aphasia or Anastasia or, you know, like some other term.
Right.
Was often.
I mean, I suppose. But if like electricity, as far as the wizards are concerned, is like the Muggles version of magic.
It really is. You know, yes.
This would be like not knowing the word salt water in that scenario.
That's a good point.
Right?
That's a good point. I mean, I'm trying to come to Arthur's defense wherever possible. Because
I know.
I love him as a human.
It's so unreasonably wrong, though, given his job and his interests.
But I love his immediate. So
this would be like, Ben, you know what I love is Pokemon cards.
Pokemon cards.
Right?
Yeah.
Great.
They're so
I love
fun.
Pokemon cards. It's like no one who's into it would call it that. That's what your Aunt Tina calls it, you know?
Yeah, you know, or I think anybody who's ever trying to mock Pokemon always refers to it as Pokemon.
Exactly.
I never know if that's like intentional or
if they're just uninformed and it's like you're kind of self-owning yourself a little bit. You're not aware of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's on you now.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so yeah, eclectic, you say, with a plug. Gracious, I must see that. Let's think. Ouch, Ron. So Ron's joined in.
He's now. Arrived.
What are we doing here? Has something gone wrong?
I love Ron. Has something gone wrong? Yeah, duh. And I love Fred and George's commitment to comedy in the moment. Like, oh no, Ron. This is exactly where we wanted to end up. Like, they're just immediately sarcastic.
Yes. Yeah, we're a little troubles for our lives here, said George, whose voice sounded muffled as though he was squashed against the wall.
All right. And so finally, Arthur decides he's going to give the situation a solid think and come up with an elegant solution. He says, boys, I'm trying to think what to do. Yes. Only way. Stand back here. He says, only way. And I'm like, is it the only way? Because what you're going to do is blow a hole in the wall. Like, there's got to be a different way out of this, you know? Like, you were still a grown wizard. You could still apparate out of there, right?
Right, right.
Or make some room.
Alternatively, Vernon at this point in time could be like, hold still, I'll get a hammer.
Yeah, you right. Know? Also that.
And Arthur would be like, I can't wait to see it.
I know. A hammer? What's that? Do you have a doo-scriber?
Is that him not knowing screwdriver?
Yeah, that's that.
Nailed it.
Yeah,
okay, good one. Okay, so Harry retreated to the sofa. Uncle Vernon, however, moved forward, kind of an unexpected move for him. Wait a moment, he bellowed at the fire. What exactly are you going to do? Bang! The electric fire shot across the room as the boarded up fireplace burst outward, expelling Mr. Weasley, Fred, George, and Ron in a cloud of rubble and loose chippings.
The boarded up fire. Okay, never mind. The electric fire shot across. Is the electric fire behind the boards? I don't. This is the whole situation with the fireplace.
I don't really understand.
I don't get it.
We need an anatomically correct drawing of this.
We do.
Fireplace.
I need that. Yeah, also, yeah. This is just like a punctuation thing, but I love the word bang here. It is all caps, B-A-N-G, period.
A period, yes. Just,
no exclamation point, bang.
Bang. It's,
bang.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Can you imagine an exclamation point at the end of that?
Oh, I know. Bang!
It would be so silly.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Oh, man. Let's see here. That's better, panted Mr. Weasley, brushing dust from his long green robes and straight his glasses. Ah, you must be Harry's aunt and uncle. So immediately, like, yeah. And he walks forward, reaching out a hand to shake Uncle Vernon's, who is backed up several paces. So this is that classic, like, Arthur assumes the best in everybody and Vernon assumes the worst in everybody.
Yes. And it's like, it's so funny to like, it's like to like put yourself in this world where it's just like to Arthur, like nothing that out of the ordinary has happened. Like, yeah, I blew a hole in the wall, but it's like, it's not even worth concerning myself with because with a wave of my wand, it will all be back together.
Right.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So from his perspective, he's like, nothing bad has really happened here. Like
right.
This is all incredibly solvable.
Right. It's like, oh my God, sorry, I dropped that. Hold on. Let me pick it up for you.
Exactly.
You
know? Yeah. 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 And so so then Mr. Weasley apologizes, and he does just immediately say, "It's all my fault. It just didn't occur to me that we wouldn't be able to get through at the other end. I had your fireplace connected to the flue network, you see." And he goes on to explain that he's got a useful contact at the flue regulation panel, which is kind of one of those details that I just think is kind of interesting, because it seems like this frequently comes up, but the people at the ministry seem to really like Arthur.
Oh my gosh, I highlighted that exact sentence that says, like, if nothing else, Arthur is great at networking.
Yes, yes.
He has got favors all over the place.
Amongst his peers, he's knocking it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He is great.
It's just the higher-ups who must be looking down their nose at him.
Yeah, he's just very personable, very good at everything else. Also, I just want to backtrack a sec here. We get a description of Fred and George of having bright red hair and who were identical to the last freckle. And I'm like, that is like, I assume this is just saying they look just that much alike, but like, how specific do you think that sentiment is? Like, are they like, because being identical to the last freckle would be outrageous. You know what I mean?
It would be outrageous, because it seems like, or is it not the case that freckles are usually like created by exposure to the sun?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's like, it doesn't really seem like their placement would be so specific. I'm sure you're bringing this up as the father of twins.
I'm bringing it. I do have twins myself, if you didn't know.
Yeah.
But I bring it up because like, I'm wondering like if indeed they are identical down to the last freckle, if that is like a facet of being magical twins.
Oh, yeah. So kind of similar to like to Harry's making the diet not work. It's like they're not just twins, they are like magically twins.
Yes, exactly.
Like, they're like it, like halves to each other.
Yes, yeah, like literally.
Yeah.
Like magically.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, like their appearance like will be remain the same.
Yes, like no matter what.
Like no matter what. Well, until like someone's ear gets cut off or something.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah, spoilers.
That's like a cursed situation.
Exactly, know? Exactly. Yeah. How's the magic to know?
How's the magic to know? Yeah, you know, you can't cure magical wounds and whatnot. But that is interesting to me. Like if they're like twins. Like I wonder if like Padma and Parvati are also like identical to the last freckle.
Well, that's an interesting case too, though, because they're in different houses.
That's true.
You know,
that's
so they're,
true.
They are. You have to.
Well,
be
they
careful.
Can still be their own person,
of course,
but
yeah,
just like
yeah.
appearance wise.
Okay. I see what you're saying. That's what you're saying. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It never occurred to me really fully until you had twins that it's like you have to remember that they are frequently referred to as a joint entity, as like the twins.
Yeah.
But they are, of course, two distinct humans.
They absolutely are. Yes. And I mean, my twins, Nick and Nate, are absolute best buds. And most people can't tell them apart, but they are certainly not identical to the last freckle, despite being identical twins.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And possibly what is known as mirror twins, which is like a subset of identical twins.
I know, we're
just sort of discovering this now as they're starting to do like handwriting stuff, but it's like where the egg splits later on in the process than usual, and the end result is that like one of, they're like almost like inverted, so like one is right-handed, one is left-handed.
Yes.
One is like leads with their right foot, one leads with their left, which is very interesting.
What I'm hearing, Jay, is you have magically created twins.
I have magical twins.
Down to the last freckle.
Down to the last freckle. Nick and Nate, look out, people.
Shout out to the boys.
Shout out to the boys. That's right.
Let's see here. Arthur does say, "I'll light a fire to send the boys back, and then I can repair your fireplace before I disapparate." So I do think this is like a good line, because basically like Arthur is within seconds of exiting the grate here. He is like explaining, "I can fix this.
I can fix this. No worries."
It, like that is really like the main piece of information that I feel like any, I mean, it's like, it's easy to be judgmental of the Dursleys because we don't live in a world where there's magic, or how simply jarring it would be to like all of a sudden have like, you know, to be sitting where we're sitting and have like the wall across from us just be like blown in.
Yeah.
And then be like, fix now, please.
Excuse me.
But the thing is that the Dursleys have known about magic long enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that they had to go and get like Dudley's tail removed. So even that, they might be like, well, these people are going to show up late, destroy our living room, and then leave us with a huge mess
yeah.
to fix. So I suppose they could be frustrated in that particular regard. But
yeah.
I'm inclined to believe that if Arthur Weasley was the one talking to me, I'd be like, okay, I trust this guy.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's interesting is that he says, I'll light a fire, send the boys back, and repair it before I disapparate, which like, you've already got the fire going. Why aren't you just taking the fire?
Exactly.
Like, what do you mean? Why would you travel differently?
Do you think that after he lights the fire, if he disapparated, that the fire would go because his magic has left the room? Or do you think then the Dursleys would be like staring at a newly rebuilt fireplace with a crackling fire? And they're like, we don't want a fire.
I think it would stay. Yeah. And they couldn't put it out.
Especially because it's like,
it's not burning anything.
Yeah, there's no wood.
There's no wood.
So that the Dursleys just always have a fire going.
Always have a fire. Oh, I love that idea.
Isn't that great?
Yes, 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 yes. That's so funny. Oh, man. Love it.
But then Arthur finally gets to greet Harry. Hello, Harry. Got your trunk ready? And Harry's like, it's upstairs. And then Fred and George, who have done this in reverse before, because when they come to save Harry in Chamber of Secrets, it's Fred and George who come in through the window because they know how to pick the lock on the cupboard under the stairs.
Yeah.
So now they're near the cupboard under the stairs, but they're running up to the bedroom. Yes. Whereas that time they were going in the opposite order. So
right. They're like, we know where it is.
We know exactly where it is. And it says that Harry suspected that Fred and George were hoping for a glimpse of Dudley. They had heard a lot about him from Harry.
Yeah, which they absolutely are.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And then it's like, so in the meantime, Arthur's trying to make small talk. It says, very nice place you've got here. Which, like, dude, you just blew it. Like, I don't know why you need to wait for them to leave before you clean it up. Like, do that immediately, man.
Yes, yeah.
Do it immediately.
Just start solving that problem right off.
You know?
I do think that this could be, if done properly in the live action, or not the live action, the new series on HBO, I feel like the scene could be just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
To, like, really milk the awkwardness of the situation. Like, just have the whole room covered in dust.
Oh, my God. I know. Just have him just, like, being practicing politeness despite it not being appropriate at all.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And then he, like, tries to make what he thinks is, like, a regular muggle conversation. They run off electricity, do they?
He said knowledgeably.
I know. Ah, yes, I can see the plugs. I collect plugs, he added, and batteries. Got a very large collection of batteries. My wife thinks I'm mad, but there you are. It's like he's exchanging, you know, grievances at the water cooler. It's just like, oh, Molly, you know, wives always getting on your battery collection. Am I right, Vernon? a soul, battery lags.
Oh man, yeah, I knew you're exactly right. Like he knows so little about. He's so fascinated, but knows so little.
Trying so hard to be relatable.
Exactly, yeah. And it's just not working.
Yeah.
Let's see here. So Uncle Vernon is just kind of getting more angry, it seems.
Yes.
As the situation is unfolding here. Then Dudley suddenly reappears in the room, and Harry could hear the clunk of his trunk coming down the stairs and knew that the sounds had scared Dudley out of the kitchen.
I love the clunk of his trunk means they're dragging it. Despite there being two of them who could definitely carry it,
yes,
they are clunking it down the stairs. I just realized that as I'm reading it right now. I'm like, That's funny.
I bet they didn't even have to discuss it. It was just sort of like dragging it, of course.
Dragging it, yes, yeah. You get one end and I'll just leave this one on the ground, shall I? Yup.
Let's see here. So then because Mr. Weasley's now spotted Dudley, he says, this is your cousin, is it, Harry? Taking another brave stab at making conversation.
Yep, a true Harry. Gryffindor.
True indeed. Yep, said Harry. That's Dudley.
There he is. It's just getting funnier and funnier. Man, Mr. Weasley thought Dudley was quite as bad as the Dursleys thought he was, except Mr. Weasley felt sympathy rather than fear. I love this. Is funny. He's like starting to really think that the Dursleys are being a bit odd. like, okay, you guys aren't being very polite. I'm like, I'm here in your house. You know, I'm here now. Entertain me. Come on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Not quite. Then he's trying so hard to be nice to Dudley. He's like, having a good holiday, Dudley. Just like, not working, dude. Clean up the mess.
Right. Yeah. Then Fred and George come back into the room. They glanced around as they entered and spotted Dudley. Their faces cracked into identical evil grins.
Evil twins. And I think it's funny that the very next sentence is Mr. Weasley saying, better get cracking then. Which is like, the word cracked was used like twice in very quick succession.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
How did the editor not pick up on that?
I don't know. I was like, that is interesting.
Yeah, so literally, these are lines back to back. Their faces cracked into identical evil grins. All right, said Mr. Weasley. Better get cracking then.
I know.
That is comical. I accidentally do this in text messages all the time.
Oh.
Where like it's taking me like a while to like respond to something, and I will like use the same verbiage more than once in the same message.
Yeah.
And
I used to accidentally do this. This was like on Instant Messenger, there was like the haha sandwich, where like sometimes if you were responding to someone, you'd say like haha and then finish your thought.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you'd finish your thought and then put haha at the end.
Right.
But so like sometimes if you were like responding to them, you'd say haha and then finish your thought, but also include a joke and then put it at the end, and you'd have the haha sandwich.
Oh.
Yeah.
But this was a good thing or a bad thing?
It was like, whoops, you didn't really think that through, did you?
Right. Like, haha, that's so funny, haha.
Yeah, exactly. That, yes. Yeah.
Especially because that's so funny also just means haha.
I know. You basically just said ha 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 ha.
Good times.
Good
times.
Oh, instant messenger.
Yes, indeed.
There we go.
Let's see here. So he pushed back his sleeves on his robes, took out his wand. Harry saw the Dursleys lean back against the wall as one incendio, said Mr. Weasley, pointing his wand at the hole in the wall behind him.
I love how it's just the hole in the wall.
The hole in the wall, yes. Not the fireplace anymore. Now it's just the hole.
Yeah.
Flames rose at once into the fireplace, crackling merrily as though they had been burning for hours.
Yeah, on nothing.
On nothing, yeah. I was like, is there... Because it's like, there definitely was wood.
Yeah.
Well, other than the wood
that just blasted into the living room.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's like, is he using that wood to
burn? Think it's just burning on like the grates, you know?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, the permanent fire.
It's like the fire Hermione puts in the jars. It's like there's no fuel in there.
Exactly.
Yeah, not even oxygen in there, come to think of it.
When you think about it like that, it does seem a little strange.
Yeah, well, fire's magical, you know?
Right.
It's pretty perfectly good for this book, too, called The Goblet of Fire.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, if it's like... This is the type of thing where it's like we're like so in it, and the people listening are like, guys, obviously.
Yeah. His fire magical. Listen to the name of the book, guys.
The Goblet of Fire. The
Goblet of Fire. Fire is going to magically bind Harry into a competition he should easily be able to sit out.
Yeah. But he can't.
But he can't.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
Okay. So off you go then, Fred, said Mr. Weasley. Coming, said Fred. Oh, no. Hang on. A bag of sweets had spilled out of Fred's pocket, and the contents were now rolling in every direction. Big, fat toffees and brightly colored wrappers.
Oh, I love how the Weasley twins use the retired person candy packaging methodology.
Like having the...
Just brightly colored foil things.
Yeah.
Who knows what's in there, you know? Butterscotch?
Yeah. That's basically what a big fat toffee is.
Yeah.
Which, incidentally, sounds so good.
It does.
I want one.
I want a big fat toffee.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Yeah, it just sounds like such an old-fashioned kind of looking candy.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
But so no then, branding yet, you know?
Nope, none yet.
Yep.
But so then they step into the Fred goes through, says the burrow, heads back, and then George does the same, and then Ron, you next, said Mr. Weasley.
See, what was the point of bringing Ron?
What was the?
He does nothing.
I mean, realistically, it seems like Arthur could have easily done this mission alone.
Probably should have.
Do you think it's the kind of thing? Because I think about the instances like where like I'm going to take the trash out, and my daughter Addison will be like, "Can I come with you?" And it's like, it's really not a two-person job. And she's like, "I want to come." And it's
All right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, if anybody was watching, I'm like, why did you bring your daughter to take the trash out? It's like, She wanted to come.
I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, is this the type of situation where Arthur is like going into the kitchen, step into the fireplace, and like, I'm off to collect Harry, and friend George and Ron are like, can we come? And he's like, I guess.
I know. I love those memes where it's like me taking the trash out and it's just like, oh, Shrek and Donkey out in another world with adventure. You're like, okay.
Oh my, I'm going to think about that every single time now that Addy comes with me.
What? Here we go.
Shrek and Donkey.
Oh, man. I suppose you could, like, maybe Mr. Weasley is like, this is a great opportunity for my boys to interact with muggles in a real safe way and like get a good look at a muggle home from the inside. And that's important to me as someone who works with muggles, and I'm sure nothing crazy will happen.
Look, boys, eclectricity.
Eclectricity. You can see it up close. Exactly. Otherwise, Ron basically came through the fireplace, got stuck, stepped out, went back in the fireplace.
That's his whole saga there so far. Well, he exchanged a grin with Harry at some point.
Yes, like, haha, that's Dudley.
That's Dudley. Well, bye then, Harry said to the Dursleys. They didn't say anything at all. Harry moved towards the fire, but just as he reached the edge of the hearth, Mr. Weasley put out a hand and held him back.
Oh, I love the way in which he is so offended by this.
Yes. He is like, he was looking at the Dursleys in amazement. Harry said goodbye to you, he said. Didn't you hear him? It doesn't matter, Harry muttered to Mr. Weasley. Honestly, I don't care.
I don't care. I love the sentence where it says, the idea of being, Uncle Vernon's face worked furiously. The idea of being taught consideration by a man who had just blasted away half his living room wall seemed to be causing him intense suffering. like, yeah, I can see that.
Yep. Especially knowing Mr. Mr. Dursley, especially knowing Vernon, it does feel like it's like, ooh, man, we are now truly playing with fire
in more ways than
one, aren't we?
Yeah.
But so finally, he does, because I think Uncle Vernon spots Arthur's wand in his hand, reluctantly says goodbye then. And then Harry says, see you. And then putting one foot forward into the green flames, which felt pleasantly like warm breath.
Warm breath.
Which, I mean, it's a stretch of a sentence.
It is.
I mean, it's like, I love this air conditioning. It feels just like warm breath.
Yeah, you know when someone's breathing on you real warm like?
Right, and you're like, ah, pleasant. Ah,
pleasant.
anyway, I also think it's a good trivia question. What does the flames feel like
when
stepping in? Yeah, warm breath.
Warm breath.
So remember that forever.
At that moment, though, however, a horrible gagging sound started to erupt behind him, and Aunt Petunia started to scream. And, of course, Dudley's tongue has begun to grow.
Yes.
Up to a foot long, it's just lolling out of his mouth, which, one, gross. And he's eaten one of the toffees, which, like, dude, Dudley, come on, man. Don't take candy from strangers. Like, you know, even you know that.
Even you know. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you would think that, given how much, like, reluctance the Dursleys have towards anything magical, that would have been a barrier.
Yeah, you absolutely would. But he's just like, ooh, candy.
Yep.
Must eat. So he more grated celery.
Yeah. So he goes for it.
He goes for it.
And yeah, so now his foot is a tongue long. And
his tongue is a foot long.
What did I say?
Foot is a tongue long. He's just got like a sloppy foot over there. It's just he just got a little bit of tongue foot.
He's got tongue foot.
That's so gross.
It is a horrid thought. Especially if it could taste.
Is that how butterflies are? Don't they taste with their feet?
Ooh.
They got tongue feet.
They got tongue feet. You're right. Butterflies got tongue feet.
Butterflies got tongue feet. Coming to a
store near you. Once again, Arthur's like, not to worry, I can sort him out, advancing a Dudley with his wand outstretched, which, of course, from the Dursley's perspective, is the worst possible thing.
The worst thing ever. I love that Aunt Petunia doesn't realize it's his tongue either, and she's just pulling on it, like trying to get it out of his mouth.
Yes, which, I know.
Oh, my God, it would hurt so bad. It would hurt so bad.
Yes. It would be incredibly uncomfortable. But then Petunia pulls a little bit of a Lily here. Aunt Petunia screamed worse than ever and threw herself on top of Dudley, shielding him from Mr. Weasley.
Oh, that's kind of, that is, you know what? I love that, though.
It's a little bit adorable.
It is like, no, not my son.
To which Mr. Weasley's like, now what is going on? It's a simple process. It was the toffee. My son, Fred, real practical joker, but it's only an engorgement charm. At least I think it is. Please, I can correct it.
I have never compared this situation to Lily protecting Harry from Voldemort because it's like the exact opposite. Like, yes. Lily protecting
Harry.
Petunia protecting Dudley from Arthur.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's like you couldn't have a kinder, more gentle human.
Yes. Yeah.
On the other end.
He's like trying to save him, and she's like, never. Yeah, it's the opposite. He's a super nice guy trying to save Dudley as opposed to super mean guy trying to kill Harry.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Let's see here. But yeah, so the Dursleys are not reassured at all. Aunt Petunia is now sobbing hysterically, tugging on Dudley's tongue.
Still pulling on it. God. Terrible. And then Uncle Vernon just lost a blow of control. He's just grabbing things from the shelf and throwing them at Mr. Weasley.
I know, yeah. It says he grabbed a china figure from on top of the sideboard and threw it very hard at Mr. Weasley, who ducked, causing the ornament to shatter in the blasted fireplace.
Now, really? I'm trying to help.
I like to think that maybe this, like, that Mr. Weasley was also a beater, and that was a little bit of his beater and things coming through. Like,
shoo, shoo. Yeah.
Missed it.
Yeah.
No worries.
You'd think that would come up later, though, you know, because they talk to Ludo Bagman so much in this book, and everyone's talking about what a beater he was.
That's true.
Fred and George. That, you know what, though? Fred and George aren't even like, we're beaters, too.
You're right. Yeah. It seems like that would come up.
Yeah.
They're kind of cut from the same cloth.
Right, a little bit.
So to speak.
Yeah. All gambling and stuff. You know how beaters are gamblers.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yep.
The very next line we get is, bellowing like a wounded hippo, Uncle Vernon snatched up another ornament. Mm-hmm. Harry, just go, Mr. Weasley shouted, his wand on Uncle Vernon. I'll sort this out.
Harry didn't want to miss the fun. It's like, Harry has been waiting literally all day to like leave this house for a year. Now he's like, mouse the ground.
I have a few more minutes.
You know what? What's a few more minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He stepped in the fire, looking over his shoulder as he said, the burrow. The last fleeting glimpse of the living room was of Mr. Weasley blasting a third ornament out of Uncle Vernon's hand with his wand. Aunt Petunia screaming and lying on top of Dudley, and Dudley's tongue lolling around like a great slimy python.
Ugh,
but
gross.
The next moment, Harry had begun to spin very fast, and the Dursley living room was whipped out of sight in a rush of emerald green flames.
I mean, aside from anything else, like the panic and the pain, this just must taste terrible to Dudley, right?
It must.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of bad flavors.
I mean, honestly, it's like I can completely understand how this would be it kind of like almost makes me like gag a little bit just like thinking about it. Like having your tongue be like all the way out everywhere. It's like, I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this is the point though where it's like I am... Like, it is interesting that this happens, and it's like, you read this, and it's hilarious, and it's very funny, because, like, you know Dudley's kind of a bully, and Fred and George are just, like, practical jokers, and they don't mean any, like, true harm or anything.
Right.
But what is interesting here is that no matter how you slice it, it is still wizards taking advantage of muggles in some way. Like, Fred and George are intentionally doing a thing to Dudley.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
And it is like... It is so weird, and I think Mr. Weasley is going to talk about it in the very next chapter, but like you have this situation here, which feels like it's kind of all in good fun, but then after the Quidditch World Cup, the Death Eaters are going to do very similar, like, not similar things, obviously way, way worse things to the muggles at the campsite. Like, they're going to just sort of, like, use magic against them for their own fun.
Yes. You know? And you're exactly right. In the very next chapter, and I'm just jumping ahead right now because I wanted to reinforce your point, that sort of behavior seriously undermines wizard-muggle relations. I spent half my life campaigning against the mistreatment of muggles and my own sons.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. And that's coming up in the next chapter. But I think that's a very good point, is that it's sort of like, one way or another, it's almost like these cultures are so, like, separate from one another that they're not, like, you know, they don't have enough awareness. And I mean, even to our points about Arthur all through the chapter, it's like, even Arthur, who's very leaned in, is not super well informed.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so it's like, if you can imagine that Arthur isn't well informed, then how uninformed is almost everyone else?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And like, Fred and George are going to go on to say, it's like, we didn't do it because he was a muggle. We did it because he's a great bullying git.
Right.
You know, which is like, you know that and stuff, like, you know, you, the reader, know that. But it's like, I think it's like, there's often like the, the conversation of like, you know, intent versus impact. And I think what Mr. Weasley is trying to say is like, in this situation, it's just like, it's the impact that is more important than the intent behind it. Is like whatever, like, I don't care what he did, he's still a muggle and you're still wizards and you still took advantage of that.
I think you're exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's typically the thing, is that usually it's not people's intentions that matter so much as what the actual effects end up being.
Yeah.
And that's where you just need to try to be more thoughtful in your actions or words.
Yeah. Now, the difference, of course, obviously, between Fred and George and the Death Eaters is that they are teenagers and they're just playing a joke and they are maybe less equipped, whereas the Death Eaters are absolutely intending to cause harm and are adults who should absolutely not be doing anything like this.
Yes. Both their intent and impact are in the wrong places.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Fred and George have, like, hilarious intent with bad impact, whereas the Death Eaters have very malicious intent, very malicious impact.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. So I think that's a big one. I feel like there's a small amount of, like, furthering, like, or trying to demonstrate the differences, because, like, between, you know, muggles and wizards, like you're saying. And I think the big thing for me was, I was like, we get a lot of emphasis, like, when they arrive at the campsite for the Quidditch World Cup, we get, like, a lot of information about, like, the various wizards who are struggling to dress properly, and, you know, Mr. Weasley's inability to use, like, muggle money and stuff like that. And then, like, Barty Crouch Sr. will show up and he's, like, impeccably dressed to the point that, like, possibly even, like, Vernon couldn't disapprove of his perfect pencil mustache or whatever he's got going on. Like, you know, it's, there, it's, I think that was sort of why I was asking the questions, like, what is the point of this chapter? Because I feel like so much of it is otherwise handled rather thoroughly elsewhere.
Right.
Like, there's not, like, a major, major piece. We get, like, a little bit of an introduction to Weasley's Wizard Wheezes, but we'll also get that through, like, Molly being upset with the boys, which, I mean, I guess she's upset because they use them, but, you know. That's a, like, it could happen other ways. We also know there's, like, the trick wand as part of, like, the bet with Ludo Bagman. So it's kind of like it will also be introduced there, and it'll still take a whole nother, really almost two books before we'll have, like, Weasley Wizard Wheezes properly become a thing.
Yeah.
Like all the way. So I don't know. Yeah, it's sort of just like an interesting chapter. It doesn't really give us a whole lot of, like, new anything. I mean, certainly makes us love, you know, Arthur more, which,
oh, absolutely,
you know, yeah, is always great. I mean, he's just such a him and Lupin really are, I think, just like two of the best.
Oh, just two of the best, yeah, characters.
Yes, yeah, they're just really, yeah, delightful. But yeah, anyway, so I'm sort of amazed looking at the clock here. I can't believe we ended up going as long as we did about a chapter that's not terribly long and is not very full of deep and important
deep lore.
Yeah,
but there's not the flu powder lore in this chapter, okay?
That's right. Yeah, we had to cover our theory on where flu powder comes from.
Yes, we did.
Exactly. Okay, do you have a review for us, Jay?
I sure do. Today's review comes from Hollowed Nanaki, and I actually went to the way that Apple does their reviews is that if you go and read them, they're typically by country,
okay,
or whatever. So I normally am looking at the US reviews, but I switched it, so today I'm looking at the Canadian reviews.
Hey,
what do you know? So this says, hi y'all, loving the podcast. I was wondering what the interaction between the map and the about the interaction between the map and the time turner. Wouldn't people be using the time turner appear twice on the map? If so, how did Harry miss Hermione being there twice? Same goes for Lupin with Harry and Hermione before going out to the shack. So and I honestly, like, I read this one and then I went to the next review and it was the exact same question by a different person. And I was like, well, we need to talk about the map and the time turner and whether there's two copies of people on it at the same time. And so as far as I would understand it, that when you go back, you are literally there again at the same time. You are back. It is 3 hours ago or whatever.
Right.
So if you looked at the map, yes, Harry and Hermione should be on the map twice at that point.
Right. Yep.
That said, we know that I think the map goes up to the edge of the forest, and when Lupin runs out is during the time period when Harry and Hermione, the second round of them, or the, yeah, yeah, the ones who traveled back in time are hiding in the forest.
Yes.
Watching the proceedings. So I, like, they would appear on the map, and for if he'd been looking at the right times, he could have seen two copies of them at the same time.
Yes. And it's like, sometimes I think it's kind of interesting with the map, even like going back to like the Peter Pettigrew question with, like, you know, Ron and everything. You know, I know that's always been like a big one. Like, why didn't anybody ever notice that Peter Pettigrew was like in the Gryffindor common room? But like, I almost think on some level, if you can imagine like printing off like your bank statement for like all of your, you know, debit card transactions, and somebody could say, one of these is fraudulent, which one is it? Like, at a glance, you're not going to know which one it is.
Right.
Like, because for the most part, you're like, you would just assume things are in order.
Right.
And so it could potentially be the type of thing, like, why isn't Harry ever noticing like two Hermiones? It's like, because he's not really looking for Hermione.
Right. And not only that, there's like, you know, however many students at the school, it's just a ton of moving dots everywhere.
Exactly.
And it's like, yeah, with Fred and George, it's like, you know, do they, you know all of the first years? Do they know all of the second years, all of the third years, even just in Gryffindor?
Right.
Like, you think probably, like, how many could there possibly be? Like, 70 of them? Like, it doesn't seem like it'd be that hard to, like, maybe know every single person's name.
Right.
But if you just see, like, the name Peter Pettigrew on the map and you don't know who it is, you're not going to be like, now, wait a minute, who's this kid? It's just, like, it's just the name of someone you assume you don't know.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that would be, like, the, you know, if you see, like, if one of the charges on your bank statement, to use that example again, is an Amazon charge or whatever, and you have seven of them.
Right.
It's like, you might look at an Amazon charge and be like, well, I do shop at Amazon fairly regularly. So, like, no reason to be concerned.
Right.
But it's like, well, that actually is the fraudulent charge. It just is disguised as something you would do anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. So like, unless Fred and George are literally like sitting down in the common room, poring over the map, which of course they wouldn't do because they know they're not supposed to have it and they don't want their secret to be revealed.
Right.
And they're like staring at Ron holding Scabbers and looking at the map and being like, well, wait, huh? Wait, what? You know?
Right.
You know, like yes. That's what it's going to take. Like, because if you think about the way they're using the map, they're opening it usually to get around the school and make sure they're not running into like Filch or Mrs. Norris or Peeves or one of the teachers.
Right.
So like when they're opening it, they're not just like checking up on stuff. They're specifically using it to like look, see where they themselves are and whether the coast is clear around them.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's probably even less what the dots say and more just that there are dots present.
Right.
So, and I think that's like an easy one to think would make more sense. Because I think we would be so fascinated with the concept of having such a map that it would just be like, I just want to see everything.
Yeah.
Like what's everyone up to?
Right. Right.
You know, it's such an allure, but
like for the most part, if you're looking at it, like at a school, you know, like it might be interesting if you're Fred and George and you're opening it up at night and you see, you know, oh, look, the Cho Chang dog is out of bed, you know, like, oh, what's she doing out of bed? You know, that'd be kind of interesting to know.
Right.
But like, you know, for the most part, if you're looking at it at school, everyone's going to be just walking to class or in class or in their dorms,
right?
Or eating, you know?
More often than not, people are where they're supposed to be.
Right, exactly. You know?
And that's the thing with a bank statement. More often than not, most of your charges are valid.
Right.
You know, like, that's what makes it, you know, hard to... It's not, something doesn't just jump off the page unless it's for like $48,000 or something like that. And you're like, wait, I didn't do that.
Hold on a second. I don't remember buying a boat. Yeah.
I do remember buying a boat.
Yeah, sorry. I did buy it off Amazon, though.
I did not off Amazon. You're right. You're right. I did do that this year, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so I think that could be a portion of it. The bigger question I feel like this reviewer was going for is the, would somebody using a time turner show up twice? And I do think... Without a shadow of a doubt, yes.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they absolutely would.
Yeah.
So I do think that, like, especially like when you fast forward to, like, Half-Blood Prince and, like, Harry is really obsessed with, like, Draco, I think that, like, if two Draco dots showed up, like, that would be the type of thing where it's, like, that would stand out in a huge way to Harry because he's very specifically looking for one person whose location he doesn't usually know.
Yeah.
You know, so then it's kind of like, hold up.
Yeah, and there are times when Draco's disappearing from the map and he can't find him. And this is the thing, is that, like, the clues are there for you in that scenario because he's like, there are times when, like, Crabbe and Goyle are just sort of, like, standing around doing nothing for, like, long periods of time.
Right.
But at those times, Draco wasn't on the map. And it's just like, that's because they're standing guard at that time.
Right.
But, like, you know, it's like, if Harry had been able to go down with the map and, like, ever catch Draco going in the room or something, he could notice that the two girls at the end of the hallway were Crabbe and Goyle.
That is also true. You know? That is also true. Yeah. Yep. So it's like, it's usually that he's not in the right place at the right time to, like,
right,
you know, cross-tabulate.
Yeah, it's like, not only do you have to be, like, aware that something is askew on the map, you have to be looking at the right time.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Well, and so even on that example, though, like, so let's just, I mean, the time turners are destroyable. Let's say Draco is using one. Let's say Harry finds Draco in the potions room or something. Like, is he too, like, at that point in time, do you stop and think, like, let me check everywhere else too, just to make sure there's not a second
exactly.
One.
Yeah.
It's like if you find him in the potions room, it's like that's probably where he is.
Exactly. Like even going back to the Lupin time turner example, like could he have seen two Harry and Hermione's? Like he could have, yes. But like he even tells Harry when he gets to the Shrieking Shack, he's like, I had a feeling you might be heading down to Hagrid's tonight to check on, you know, Buckbeak or to check on him.
Right.
Or whatever. So it's like Lupin opens the map specifically to see if Harry and Hermione are walking down to Hagrid's.
And they are.
And he looks, and they are. So it's like, yeah, he's not in his mind like, well, now, wait a minute. Let's just double check to make sure there's not anywhere else. Like, he looks where he thinks they're going to be, and he finds them exactly there. So, like, it's like confirmation bias, you know?
Yes.
Not even bias. It's just like, it's just confirmation. Like, yep, what I was looking for is there. Like, you know, even if the other two are just dots in the forest, like, right off to the side, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I don't think it shows inside the forest anyway. So.
Well, and the only other big question that I would say would be left is just whether or not like Dumbledore has some way of knowing in advance. Because, I mean, especially in the movies, it's the case that like Dumbledore is like clearly like stalling and he's like gesturing in the opposite direction. And like there's like clear things that are happening that would like suggest to you that like Dumbledore is like attempting to like draw McNair and Fudge's attention away from what's happening out back.
Yeah.
But then, you know, so then the question is almost like, does Dumbledore already know that things are the foot?
Right.
In some capacity.
And that's, yeah, we don't have any confirmation that he does.
We don't have any confirmation. That would be the type of thing like where if Dumbledore's looking at the map, maybe he's trying to see if something is off.
Right.
And then he's looking for anomalies.
Yeah.
And that's where you'd be looking for that type of thing. That would also assume that Dumbledore has a map, which we don't really think he does anyway. So
yeah.
It's just Dumbledore being Dumbledore and knowing a lot of things.
Knowing lots of stuff, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yeah.
I think that just about does it.
I think that does just about do it. But thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. Next week, make sure you join us for Chapter 5, Weasley's Wizard Wheezes, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Y'all, I am so excited because Through the Gryffindor is heading back out on tour. Starting in February of 2025, we'll be performing live shows in Charlotte, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, Atlanta, and Nashville. And as always, we will be bringing all of the magic with a tour-long Jay versus Ben trivia showdown with questions submitted and asked by all of you. And then, of course, we will dim the lights for a live recording of Through the Gryffindor. And y'all, these nights have made for some of my all-time favorite since we have started making content on the internet. It is truly a magical evening, nerding out Harry Potter style with the very best community online. Plus, we have a VIP upgrade for each show if you want to come and meet Jay and I, take photos, ask questions, and score an exclusive signed tour poster before the show begins. We would love to see you. We'd love to meet you, and we hope you will come and join us for all of the fun. Tickets are available in the show notes for every show or at supercarlinbrothers.com. Super Carlin Brothers is sponsored by Nude. Y'all, of course, know about my podcasting and YouTube endeavors, and you may even know that I do some aquarium maintenance at times, but you may not be aware that my wife, Alice, and I also own a business together called Nude. I know it's a funny name, but there's actually a fun story behind it. See, Alice has always had a deep love for clothing and fashion, but even more so for thrifting. It was her way to sustainably and economically expand her wardrobe while still aiming for quality brands that would last. And she is really good at it. Like, I can't tell you the number of times over the years that she has been stopped by people admiring her finds. So much so that she coined a phrase for her response. Thanks, it's nude. As in new, but in the past tense, because it's not exactly new, it's nude. So, we took this concept and created a storefront not 100 yards from where Super Carlin Brothers was created and have an online shop featuring pre-loved clothing from brands like Lululemon, Free People, Anthropologie, Madewell, and so many more. If you'd like to check it out for yourself to ring in the nude year, if you will, you can do so at nudesalem.com and use promo code SUPER to get 20% off your entire order. That's NEWDSalem.com, promo code SUPER for 20% off.